Yeah, it's moving now. Okay, sure. Thank you. Okay. 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 Pause. I'll pause it. Yeah. Thank you. Sure.
Imagine if your receptionist goes off, you need someone to come in, and they're going to send it into the department. Well, then wait 10 years for you to send some people back, like you're doing with workman's compensation. I'd like to know whether you have the ability to be able to pursue that, because it doesn't look like it from the report that you've just given up, where you placed 3,500 people. Then I go on to page 13 where it says promote sound labor relations. Now, I want the department to tell me whether they believe that sound labor relations is indicative of extending collective agreements. My understanding is that's got nothing to do with sound labor relations, that's just got to do with legislation. But I'd like to have the explanation as to why you believe extending collective agreements contributes to sound labor relations. Then monitoring the impact of the legislation, that's all very well. One wants to know how much you're actually spending on it, because we saw in one of the reports that the earmark over the next few years, 2.3 billion rand to investigate minimum wage. How much are you spending on all the other investigations that we're seeing? If I could go on to page 15, you said, and it says strengthen the institutional capacity of the department. From what I understand, the service delivery improvement plan, you said it was done. Except the note I've got here is not yet approved, unless I've got the old note. I'm not sure what's happened over there. Just further down, you said that during quarter four, 13 cases of irregular expenditure reported was with disciplinary action taken against these people. Were they suspended or they still suspended? How much is it costing? If you go down, where it says percentage of fraud cases received or detected finalized per year, again, were these people suspended? Are they suspended? Are they dismissed? And how much is this costing? Thank you. That will be enough for me. I'll answer the question later. Thank you, Madam Chair, for the opportunity.
Okay. Thank you. Chair, let me appreciate the report, especially the transparency as reflected in the concluding remarks of this particular report. Yes, we are not happy with the performance of 50%, but I think as the DG was giving this report, he was in some instances coming up with a mechanism to improve this picture. When we turn to page 7, there's a slide there which talks to the protection of vulnerable workers, where your target was 7250 and you only managed a target of 6-7. I think our exposure to these vulnerable workers made us realize that assisting them cannot be postponed any longer. 913, which is a deficit there, is a number a bit too much after having seen what the vulnerable workers are exposed to. What is your immediate plan to achieve 100% there? I'm aware that our bank is one of the offenders that have made you to underperform. But you can't be holding arms because we are saying there was a silence in Howden. What is it that is going to be done to improve that situation? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Lulu, Honorable
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning. Just want to carry on where Honorable Lulu left off, and that's regarding the slides on page 7. Regarding the protection of vulnerable workers. We have on the first, the top side, indicating that the number of workplaces inspected per year to determine compliance with labour legislation. Now, I'm going to specifically focus on that of the two states. So the target there was 2,876, and the actual performance on, for that particular province was 3,225. And when we look at the bottom slide, makes reference to the percentage of non-complying workplaces inspected, with reference to the above dealt in terms of relevant labor inspectors. Again, I want to make reference to the Free State. It's for me a bit confusing. Here we have the Free State. There are number of non-complying workplaces inspected, 40. But the actual number of workplaces dealt with is 430. Now, you know, did we deal there with 430 employees and issue whatever notices or to those employees, whereas when we've conducted our inspection, we only discovered only 40 employees did not comply with the legislation. So that is just a bit, there's some clarity with regard to that particular one. So one thing. Then I want to move on to page 11, and my colleague, Honorable Bagel, made reference to the this particular slide. It's the contribution to decent employment creation. And I would want to concur with my colleague, but I want to just also juxtapose the last slide on page 11 with the third one on page 12, where it states that the number of vacancies and opportunities registered on ESA per year, which is 12,500. Now my question is, if those number of vacancies with totals over 20,000 are registered as employment opportunities, how come we are only able to place 3,866 employees? And I know that, you know, sort of reference is made to a mismatch of skills, but it could we be that far out in terms of placing so few employees into so many work opportunities that's available for placement? Then on page 13, the bottom slide, where we have the monitoring and impact of legislation. And in the third column, with reference to actual performance, is there reference is made there to the client satisfaction service report was also completed and submitted by March 2015. Madam Chair, perhaps it would be a good good gesture if that particular survey could also be made available to us so that we could, you know, monitor the outcome of that service at the next presentation of the department. It's just a question. And then I move on to page 15. Then at the side that my colleague made reference with regard to the percentage reduction of transgression in irregular expenditure compared to previous year. Here, in actual performance, there's an increase compared to quarter four. It doesn't state there what the corrective action is with regard to that particular increase in irregular expenditure. And then my colleague was more specific, whether employees is missed, disciplinary process underway, but I want to make it more broadly in terms of what correct action is envisaged. And then lastly, Madam Chair, I'm going to reference this client below, which is the Service Delivery Improvement Plan. See, it had to still be finalized. Reason for major variance. Correct assessment submission of the revised SDIP still to be approved. And that approval date of implementation will be June 15th. Okay? And then if you go below this, it's again with reference to this fraud. But if you look at the corrective action, ongoing training of prevention investigations, and then specifically service of a forensic investigation firm has been procured and has assumed duties towards the end of quarter four. They will also provide transfer skills as they will be working with internal staff. And then we said that date of implementation is between April and June of this year. Does that imply that the ongoing, the training of provincial investigations will be concluded on June, because ongoing means on a regular basis over a period of time, and that's this quarter that they reference to. Similarly also the transfer skills, and will that also only take place within that particular quarter? And then that's where I'm going to stop, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Jefferson. I mostly covered the previous speakers also want to join. So I've been appreciating the report that's being presented. On the obtaining things on page 11, slide 22, if we look at it, it stipulates the work seekers that has been placed. If I remember correctly, there has been a continuous challenge to the department that work seekers don't necessarily report when they are placed, and there were no mechanisms to monitor the placement of work seekers. So I'm just wondering then, if the department established monitoring tools in terms of placement of work seekers that's been effective now, and if they did, then this would be the true reflection. But if they didn't, how can we establish then that this reflection is indeed the truth in terms of placing work seekers? The other issue is on page 19, in terms of the underspending transfers of subsidies. We would remember that on several occasions that different people, community members, as well as some members were raising the challenge that there has been a backlog in the payment of compensation claims, especially. And now we see that there's been an underspending in terms of this additional funds that has been requested to address the compensation fund claims. So my question would be, did the department indeed address the backlog that were there in terms of the compensation fund claims in this regard? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. The simple way to, of course, monitor is a telephone. You just phone the company and say, did you appoint somebody and what's his name? And then you tick off on your list. A lot of red on this quarterly report. Thank you very much, CG, for tabling it. And I think it's the right thing that you've done to use monitoring systems that the AG uses. If the AG is going to give you the report and audit at the end of the year, obviously it's the right thing to do to use those standards, because then you don't mess around, you hold your staff accountable for the same standards. So I think that's the right thing to do. I am worried about all the rest.
or the target list, 50% is quite low. If it carries on like that at the end of the financial year, this committee is obviously they're going to have some serious complaints in our report on your annual report. So there are obviously some things that do need attention, some targets that are missed. When I look through the report, I'm quite concerned about a couple of things. Firstly, the number of vacancies registered seems to be, in most cases, very high. So companies are actually registering their vacancies, sometimes double or triple the target. So companies are registering, they're saying, we have vacancies. One province has got a registered vacancies of 4,000 and the target is only 1,600 or something. So people are saying, send us workers. The number of placements, however, is much lower. And perhaps the DG could give us more information as to why, or the relevant deputy DG could give us information as to why the placements are, in some cases, very much lower than the vacancies that are available. Is that a skills problem only, or are there other factors involved there? On page 13 of the printed presentation, you talk about the percentage of competent and completed labour organisation applications process. Could you just explain what a completed labour organisation application is? Is that a new trade union that is registering at the department, or is it something else? I don't know what a labour organisation application is, because you don't refer to a trade union, you refer to a labour organisation application. And we're not familiar with the terminology. If you could just explain that to us a little bit. Also, you seem to have a problem in Gauteng. The number of inspections in Gauteng is quite low down. Your number of offices has been closed and reopened, and some closed because of the condition of the building. Can you tell us which building in Gauteng was unsafe that had to be closed? Did you lease that building from a private company, or is it a government-owned building, and what's the address? I'd like to know why we occupied a building that's unsafe. Perhaps you can give us some information. And then, if you could outline your plan for helping with problems with your building and problems with low numbers of inspection. Gauteng is one of the places in South Africa with the most workers in the country. So we need in Gauteng to have many labour inspectors. We need to do many occupational health and safety inspections. We need we need to check that labour legislation is complied with in Gauteng, and clearly it's not. So please tell us your plan to turn that Gauteng problem around. It's clearly a Gauteng problem. It's my problem, so I'm also quite concerned about it. And then on page 19, my last question, this compensation fund, you request additional funds in the budget, 15 million for claims, and the payouts were not utilized. If you're sitting on an invested income of 53 billion rand, I'm not sure why you're requesting an extra 15 million from government for payouts. It doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever. Use the 53 billion you've got, government is short of money. They can barely pay the salaries at the moment. Why do you need extra money? And then to ask for extra money, not you, that seems to me to be a bit ridiculous. It might have happened, DG, before you were the DG, because of course you're new in the job, so if it's a previous mistake by a previous DG, of course we can understand that you're not to blame, but if you could just explain this. If the fund has so much money, why is asking for extra money and then not spending it? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Honorable, I'm going to ask the Deputy Director General that are here to respond to questions that are affecting their portfolio. I'm going to respond to a few of the questions, the question relating to the self-delivery improvement plan, it was an easy question. Yes, it was approved. And I think we it was just a typo, and we made amendments, and that's why the presentation reflects differently, and we apologize to the members who came here with the old and information. It was approved. I want to talk a bit about the additional funds that were requested for the compensation schemes. This is different to the normal compensation claims. This is for the public servants, all the public servants. So the 50 million is included in the public employment services allocation. So when there's an incident in one government department which involves the public service, they will then channel the claim through to the Department of Labor, and the Department of Labor will then send the claim to the compensation fund. So the payment of the in that person or anybody who has contracted a disease who even is a public servant will come from that 15 million. In this financial year, we did not receive claims as a Department of Labor, and that's why the money was not used. It's not money that is included in the 53 billion that is the value of the assets of the compensation fund. So we had to request the money because there was no provision for it. So if there were employees, government employees that contracted an occupational disease or got injured at work, we wouldn't have had money to cover them. So that was the reason why we requested it. And the reason for not spending it is because there were no claims made against. I'm going to ask my colleagues to respond to the number of questions that reflect with their area. Did you copy that?
The question that relates to corporate services or the one that I recorded, in fact the only one that was posed, refers to cases of fraud that are being investigated and how much we are spending on investigations. The investigations are done internally by staff in the department, so we are not paying external people to do the investigations. There's only one incident where we have forensic investigators on the floor now, and it's the first time that we have outsourced, given the nature actually of the issues that are being investigated. And related to that is the issue of the number of the disciplinary actions. As and when disciplinary cases are concluded, the department does accept the recommendation of presiding officer. In fact, there has been a case where the department has not complied with the action recommended by the presiding officer or any particular presiding officer. I don't have the statistics of how many people have been given written warning dismissals, but I think we can prepare that report and return it to the portfolio committee if it's necessary, based on the number of cases that we have dealt with. I think those are the only two. How much we're spending and what disciplinary action has been taken. We can return the report. We don't have
the actual figures and statistics at the moment.
Investigation done by as an outside company.
There is an investigation company in Saluba, Koboto and Uzi that is dealing with the case currently. And the only reason that this one time we brought in an outsider is because of the nature of issues that are being investigated. It's not complete yet. So in terms of what the issues are involved, we will be guided by the final report. The investigation is still in process at this juncture, and I think it would be premature really to get into what are the issues, what are the findings, what action is going to be taken in relation to that one. But all the other investigations are done internally by staff that are employed in the department, and they are paid on the basis of the salaries that they earn. So there's nothing extra that we are paid on the investigations that are done by staff that are employed in the department.
May I just ask which cases you have a legal department of the department, right? What kind of cases that you need an outside legal deputy? Even just tell me when at which stage that your legal department is not able to deal with cases.
Thanks for the question. The cases that are normally handled by the department are non-forensic. As soon as forensic capacity is required, we don't have that capability internally. So the reason we are having the company now is because we need forensic expertise, which is not available within the department. And the cases are handled by risk management and not investigated by legal. The legal people do proper legal advice and attend to litigation issues. But in terms of the investigation, they are investigated by the risk management unit in a department. And currently we have around 11 people in the risk management unit in the department, and about one or two in the provinces. So the capability is not as strong as we would like it to be, but I think with the capacity that we have, we are doing the best that we can.
Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, I'm just going to deal with probably three issues. One is the irregular expenditure. These are the regular expenditures that were discovered in the fourth quarter. We are still in the process of dealing with the investigation and the identifying what has happened, and what we're going to deal with the people that are responsible. As in the normal case of dealing with the irregular expenditure, I think when we come for the annual report to the Kewalas, we would have had time to deal with the quarter four cases that we have identified. The other issue probably just to elaborate on the DG to the compensation part, to say that for the normal employees, they are assessed and they pay for their, well, in case they would be injured on duty, but for government, that allocation is given to the Department of Labor. However, cases are registered at the compensation fund. Once they've been processed at the compensation fund and they relate to the public servant, then compensation fund will then lay a claim, or will then put a claim to the Department of Labor for that expenditure. For the first two quarters, our projection indicated that we are going to overspend on the amount that was allocated. The cases were coming hard and fast to the department. As a result, within the first two quarters, we exhausted our allocation. That is why we have to put a head memo for the additional allocation on that line item with regards to the compensation fund injuries. Unfortunately, at the point, it stopped. That is why we have to get our understanding that line item, simply because we projected that we needed more money. However, on the last two quarters, the cases were not coming from the compensation fund. It's totally different from the fund. Thing is, employers will have to make a provision for the injury on duty for public servants. And we are registered the compensation fund, and compensation fund put a claim in the department with regards to that. The third one is with regards to the building in Gauteng that is closed. It's a lease building. I think it has opposite health content. I don't have the name yet, but I can probably give the exact details. But it's just a building opposite health content in the city center in Gauteng, in Johannesburg. So those are the three issue questions that I have in my head.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm just going to add information on the Johannesburg Labour Center issue. The exact address is Netbank Mall. It's Netbank Mall building. It's number 135 Commissioner Street in Johannesburg. I just need to indicate that this labour center has been closed for some time. The reason being the labour center will comply with OHS prescriptions, particularly the quality of air. There were issues also around the possibility of asbestos and also housekeeping issues, you know, level of cleanliness and so on and so forth. Subsequent to an inspection was conducted and a condition order was issued, and several months later we were able to make strides in conjunction with assistance of the LISA. And I think until about the end of the quarter, we were ready to move in sometime in June. Most of the things had been taken care of, and there was a quality assurance activity that was handled by NASA as well. And unfortunately, when we were on the brink of moving back in, there was fire in that building. At this point, my hunch is that we're doing some kind of device intervention. When we were certain that we've taken care of everything, then it's the fire broke. So at this point, we have not even certain when the labor center is going to open. And it being the biggest labor center, not only in Houghton, but in the country, it has had dire consequences. And I think Honorable Ollis also went on to ask about the number of the labor centers that are closed, the price. Joseph is holding the booking also goes for the
thing that at which stage did you realize that this building has the fault that you have just spoken about? I'm asking this because I would think that these are issues that you look at, you correct before you list or you hire the building. So okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The building was occupied and everything there. There is a landlord for the building. That was all done through the Public Works Department. There was an inspection that was done by an inspector. The inspector then served a notice on the building, and there were various surveys that were done in order to determine whether or not the staff would go back into the building. It has been determined by the inspector that the building is not up to the required standard in terms of the occupational health and safety, and that is why the staff have not returned. And I think Ms. Moyelwa has also referred to an additional issue that has been brought up. That's the sum of it. There was a court order as well that was involved in this whole thing as well. But until the inspector determines that the staff can go back, the staff not going to return. Thank you, ma'am.
I don't have
a question. Chair, let me answer the question. The process that we follow when we acquire buildings is that there's a
we meet with Public Works. There's a building that is identified. There's an inspection that is done by both Department of Public Works and the Department of Labor to look at the suitability of the building. So when the building was procured and the lease was signed, the building complied. However, because the building has been occupied by not only the Department of Labor, but other users as well, other tenants, they have one system which sort of regulates the flow of air in the building. So they have one plant, and that plant has the capacity I'm trying to get to the technical report that I read. So the capacity of the plant can service only one third of a building. And currently, we have, I think, over 100 people that are in occupying our own offices there. Now, there's an adequate supply of and flow of air, so there's no proper ventilation. So, because the system is not designed to cater for everybody in the building, it's designed to cater for few tenants. So that's the biggest problem that was picked up. So as and when we've used the building, we've then picked up that the system got clogged up and the filters were not properly serviced over the years, and that's when we got a service provider to come in and do a survey to look at whether there's proper ventilation there, whether the system is working properly, and we realized that it's not working properly, and on the basis of that, an inspector issued a notice. But from the very word go, an inspection was done, and there was a determination that the building complies with the regulations.
Sir, I think the department was responding. I heard somebody say the office has not been in use for quite some time. What is making the department to gain to the use of that office if it has been giving problems? Because it's impacting negatively on their operations because they can't deliver.
Chairperson, thank you. The two finger on this issue. If I understand correctly, this is a large central office in downtown Johannesburg. It's closed. You're operating somewhere else. Then there's Sebokeng, thing. It's closed. Then there's Soweto at Makonia Mall, which is temporarily closed. I'm not sure if it's reopened. Can you tell us, in each of these three cases, if they're still closed, and whether you'll stop operating somewhere else. Where are those three departments, and are there any others that are part of the health team?
I don't want to comment on the results of inspection by both Department of Labor and Public Works. I don't want to comment because you are saying that the system that provides air to the building, it takes a certain capacity, so it was later when you realize that you cannot cater for all. I'm putting that aside. Now, how long has this been closed? Are we paying? And are we paying this building? And what is the role of the landlord? Because the issues that you are raising here are not issues that are as a result of your fault. So we're paying, what is that we are paying in the process? And where are these workers? And where are they, and what are they doing where they are?
let me respond to the workers. As the CFO will deal with the issue of the lease that remain and how they are concluded and why we did not move from the building. When we closed these offices, we then had to move the staff to other offices. So staff, the employees, people who were working from those offices are scattered throughout the labor centers in the province. Clementine Park, Centin, Jemistine, in those offices. So that we can, at least they are able to go to work and provide a service to the people.
With regards to the payment, Public Works is, the legal department of Public Works was assisting the department in this regard. Unfortunately, they've got a signed contract with the landlord, which they were dealing with, together with the owner of the building, since the problem was raised by the inspectors of the department, also wanted, I think we went on a second opinion in terms of ascertaining the facts, and from the Public Works was handling the whole thing. From our side, what we have paid is we received some bills regarding the municipal charges, which we haven't paid to Public Works, but we still will be guided by them in terms of how to then manage this process from the legal point of view.
In essence, we could not get out of the lease because the lease was concluded between Public Works and the landlord. So the only thing that we could do as a department was to express our dissatisfaction and unhappiness with the state of the office, and then we left it up to Public Works to try and resolve the issue with the landlord. So that's where the issue is at this stage.
Thank you, Chair. Before the question of Honourable Onus will be answered on the closed offices in Gauteng, can we extend that question to the rest of the country? How many offices are actually closed across the country? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable.
Chair, I think the officials are saying there are other tenants in the building. I have no idea of how the offices start up. Are these things not affecting the other buildings? It's only the area occupied by labor, which is in a terrible state, which is affected by this. Why are other people still continuing being in the building?
That question of Lara Bulloni was the initial question that it is not yet answered. Why have you not moved out? We understand the fact that the Public Works is one, but you have the responsibility to discharge services to the people. Now, are you telling us that you are going to fold your hands and wait for Public Works and do all that? And once you see that you are being inconvenienced, can't you do anything? You will just wait until, if Public Works comes back in 2020, then that will be the time that you move. Taking into account that these workers that we have put in all these offices, I don't know what it is that they are doing, because in all those offices that people are employed. So just tell us about why are you married to this building, and that answer, the answer to this question. Tell us, why can't you do more?
Mm-hmm. where I think when the problem escalated to the fire, public workers identified another building which we need, but we wish they wanted to show us whether we could go where we could go in. We are definitely not nailed to this office. It's at least one. If there is another alternative accommodation that is that's being shown to us, we gladly accept if it's in the right location. In terms of,
is that you put pressure on public work to get you another building? That's what we want, sir, because we did not hear you saying. We just told them that we need another building and we're assisting them to get. I don't know the process is whether you are in a position to assist, but we don't hear you saying that we are pressurizing, we want another building. We're not waiting for all these other processes.
We are putting pressure on public works, not only on housing, there are quite a number of other issues when it comes to the building that we are engaging them on. But we are really, really putting pressure on them to sort all our accommodating issues, including other offices as well.
Thank you, Chairperson. This building issues that are confusing to me. I heard the DD mentioning they are still waiting for the landlord. Is there a different landlord from Public Works? The other thing, the building that you mentioned that is being renovated, when is it going to be completed, maybe?
The issue is here. We don't see your department. You know that you have found you must answer now. You are the accounting officer. You need to find the department in that state. But we want to hear you saying, or your people saying, you find all these challenges. This is what you want to do urgently to deal with the challenges, because you can't have a problem that has no labor centers. And a problem has been there for a long time, and people are just come waking up and going to work, but there's nowhere for it to be done. All the people who are scattered in all these offices, they're waking up to go to work. I'm so frustrated where they are. And what then do we say? Because in knowing those offices should be opened with immediate effect. Maybe it's clear that there will be no correct answer that we will get from you on this building housing. I think then tell us about other offices or other labor centers. And after that, you must tell us and give us a deadline that you are giving us deadline that all these labor centers will be working. And in the process of you sorting out these offices, what is that you'll be doing for people to be getting this? Because this is something you have your mobile unit, keep that something must be done. People must get services, but you must stop your offices with immediate effect. But tell us the status of this labor center. That was the question. Honorable Lolly, when you stand up, did I give you the chance? You are back now. Okay.
Jefferson, I may not have the information about all the labor centers, but there are a few labor centers where we have quite a number of challenges with regards to their the state of the infrastructure. What we can promise the committee that we'll do, we are in the process of doing some analysis of what is happening in every area. We'll then provide that information to the committee. We have written to the DG of Public Works, and that's the point that the DFO was making. We've written to the DG of Public Works raising a number of challenges that we have. And I have proposed that we meet, and in fact, we were in a cluster meeting this morning, and I reminded him that I've written to him. I haven't received a response. And he then promised me that he will talk to his activities so that we can urgently meet and try and address the problems that we have with regards to accommodation. So there are steps that we are taking as a department. And specifically with regards to the Dolbeck Labor Center, there are steps that we took. I mean, we have engaged with Public Works on this matter. In fact, we were even prepared to, you know, withhold the renter. But unfortunately, given the fact that, you know, Public Works is our landlord in as far as departments are concerned. So we put things through them, and we expect them to then convey the message over to the rear owners of the building. So the least we could do as a department was to make sure that in order for our officials to continue rendering a service to the people, we must move them to respective to the different offices. Yes, we do use the different means to make sure that public is not inconvenient. You know, we have visiting points out there, and our officials go and visit clients. We have the mobile units, as you correctly pointed out, separately. So we're using all that venues to make sure that the public and the people that we serve are not in any way inconvenient. I do not have a date yet, Honorable Chair, as to when the Soweto office will be opened, but it will be opened very soon. I think the construction is almost complete. The construction of the office is almost complete. We will inform the committee as to exactly when that office will be opened. As I said earlier on, can we be given an opportunity to just do a proper analysis and scan our environment and find out exactly which are the offices that have been closed and which are the offices that are experiencing challenges, so that we can provide that information to the committee with the indication as to what we'll be doing as a department to make sure that those challenges that are experienced on those offices are sorted out.
I think we will give you, specifically yourself, we'll give you that opportunity to do that analysis and come back to us with solutions before the end of July. Before the end of July, you must get that one. My worry, though, why do you pay rent? I don't understand why are you paying. What are you paying? What services are being there? Are being provided to you. I know that your landlord is in public work. So where is that money going when you are not working?
So we pay three different categories of money to public work. The government buildings, wherein we have to pay a specific money for public work to put those to maintain those buildings. Where they don't have government buildings, they then lease the buildings from the private owners, in which case they sign the lease with Public Works, and Public Works then charge us. We then have to pay those lease payments to Public Works to service the lease contract. Then we pay municipal charges, the third one, which also in some cases have led to the closure of offices. Municipal charges are the charges from the municipality for electricity, sewer, and whatever else that they charge. That one, Public Works has established an agency to manage that part. That part also is not working well. We are not being invoiced on time. As a result, municipalities would close the electricity on the offices. Not because we don't want to pay, because it's because Public Works, that agency, has not invoiced us from the with the invoice from the municipality. So those are the challenges that we need to have at this meeting to make sure that these processes are streamlined, because from our side, I budget for those and I know the money for those, but if I'm not getting invoice from Public Works or from the agency, I can't just simply deliver the cash at their door.
That is I'm not going to test you this question. My question is not answered. It doesn't matter who owns the building. Whether it's public, whether it's a private public worker, listen to a private someone, you as the Department of Labor, you are paying for services that you are not getting. It doesn't matter from who, but you are not getting the services. And I'm sure when you assign a lease, there are a number of things that you sign. You can't be held responsible for things that have not been damaged, that are damaged not because of you, but, you know, there are things, there are a number of things that you sign. So I really, really don't, you have not answered me. I still feel that this money that you are paying the public work, whether public work is leasing from somewhere else or anywhere, you have no inconvenience. And this money, we don't know what you are paying for. I don't know if you can explain what you are paying for. Whether public work or private sector, what is that you are paying for? You are not in the building, and you are paying. And I'm sure it's not spent. So whatever agreement that you have entered into, that agreement is saying you pay because the services are being rendered to you. And it is saying that no services. And we are not saying a laptop exploded as a result of that explosion of that laptop for hours, then the building collapsed. That's a different case. It's not that case. So when you come and present to us these buildings and what is the thing you're doing, you must also tell us what is the problem, what went wrong, is it you, is it the other party, so that we understand the process, but the deadline, we need the deadline. But we will be here if we are saying there are more fine labor centers in all these areas. On almost all, because if you are operating in that day, it means you have to have a schedule where you'll be in a certain place on such and such a day, and then in certain places, such a people will follow that because that's something that will be published and then people know. So at least the inconveniencing of it has, or inconveniencing of people to receive services from you must be limited as much as possible.
It's just to appreciate that the CFO is not delivering money at the door of public works because of the child if he delivers money at their door.
Thank you, Gigi and Honorable Chairperson. There were a number of questions that were related to employment services. I think the first two relate to legislation. If I can just clarify the issue around vacancies. The current act does not comply employers to register vacancies. Although there is a provision that the minister may use in the event that a need arises. However, of late we have seen a large number of employers coming forward to register vacancies. The DG presented the fourth quarter report, but if you take the total number of the fourth quarter, which is going to appear in our annual report, the number goes just above 110,000. The second point related to legislation was around whether the department is ready to take over the role of public, private employment agencies and temporary employment agencies. Now, I don't think that was the intention. There are two main issues in the Act. The first one, obviously, is aimed at protecting vulnerable workers. And that is why there's an alignment between the Employment Services Act and the Labor Relations Act, Section 198, around this issue, mainly to protect vulnerable workers. How do we get both private employment services and temporary employment agencies to behave in a particular manner and work with us. The second part relates to the working relations between the Department of Labor and private employment agencies. Now, I think that there is a convention, I think if I recall 188, but I can just go and verify that, that clearly outlines how government, public employment services and private employment agencies must work. And I think there's been an initiative led by APSO, which is the Association of Private Employment Services Organization, which has actually seen the level of abuse in this sector. You may know of people imagining promising people jobs and then asking them to pay certain amounts of money with the guarantee that they will place and then disappear afterwards. And APSO is very much concerned about it. And they are working very closely with us to try and deal with that problem because it is also tarnishing their image. We are also working together in terms of scarce and critical skills. Where we don't have such scarce and critical skills on our database, we would normally approach them to assist companies that are looking for such skills before we, in line with the new amendments on the Immigration Act, recommend to Home Affairs to issue either an individual or corporate permit for such a company to bring in the skills that we don't have. So there's basically the working, prevention of abuse, but at the same time there's also working relations in terms of ensuring that we supply the labor market with the skills that it requires. The fourth point was around the number of vacancies and opportunities registered. Like I said, there is more than 110,000. Now, the broad question and the reason why employers would normally come to the department without being compelled is that they are able to reduce cost. It actually reduces their recruitment time frames, and the issue that is emerging in the vacancies that are coming in is that the way they are packaging them is not in line with the classification framework for occupational classification. This is an international approach that the SFA and the Department of Higher Education and Training, Department of Labor actually uses. So they will package their vacancies differently, and that on its own has created a lot of problems in terms of matching, but also web seekers from the CVs that we see have not also packaged their CVs in line with the CFO, which is making matching also very difficult. But there are also issues around the aspects that are not inherent requirements to the job. If I can give you an example, people will look for a code 14 driver, or they will look for a code welded person, code welder and all that. But in addition, they will put a specific requirement that the person in case of a driver must speak Malawian, or in case of a welder must speak Chinese, Mandarin. So you can see that the trend has got a discriminatory element which is not inherent, and the argument will be that no, the contractor employed or who was awarded the contract is Chinese, and therefore in order to facilitate communication, that is why they need that requirement. Now, in terms of what is it that we are doing, and I think the observation is correct, and we didn't try to hide it, that there is a serious discrepancy between the placement rate and the number of jobs registered, 110 against the total for the year, just above 14,000. I think partly the problem that we indicated was this mismatch, but there's also a reality that we must accept as South Africans, that the old jobs that we have are diminishing very fast. If you look at your automobile industries that used to employ in the region of 15,000, Mercedes-Benz, Ford Motor Corporation, BMW, the big steel manufacturing industries, etc. Those jobs are gone. And the number of people employed there are in the region of 800, 1,000, that's about it, in the big high-service, etc. But what is also emerging is that there are new jobs that are emerging because of technological changes and the kind of products that are coming in, that the current people that we have in our database does not necessarily have the kind of skills that are required in those jobs. So the question of mismatch is a big issue, and this is something that we are taking up with colleagues in the Department of Education. They are very serious about it. They are quite aware that some of the programs that are being offered are not necessarily resulting in placement, and therefore there's a need to change gears so that we are also responsive to that issue. But the question was, what is it that we are doing also in order to make sure that the placement that we are talking about is a true reflection. And I'm the best one to indicate that we have had debates. And Honorable Olive, I think the numbers that we are having that we reported are based on the traditional approach that Honorable Olive gave as an indication. After doing all the counseling, everything, then you have to sit down and phone employers. Now, you are phoning HR departments that are very busy. You have sent 100 people and they have to recruit 50 people. For them to then go through that process, sometimes you are lucky that they will tell you, sometimes they are not. And it's a very, very laborious process. And that is why we are also concerned about the number. If you look at the number of people that we counsel, in there are a number of cases when you match a person will tell you that I'm already employed, you referred me to this company. And then the person did not report back to the department. So there's also an element wherein web seekers themselves don't come back to the department to report. Now, in terms of the new measures that we are looking at, firstly, in terms of the new act, we have drafted a regulation that will ensure the deregistration of a person who has registered as a web seeker after some time, unless that person declares their unemployment status. Basically, it will require that if you are unemployed after a certain period, you have to come back to the department, because we cannot assume that you are still unemployed, and that is important if we are to keep an up-to-date register of unemployed people, because otherwise we will keep shelves of people who we may think they are still unemployed, only to find that they are employed. The second one that we are already in the process of implementing is the link with the UI. In this case, is that any person, just like NASFAS and other areas, the minute somebody that was on our web seeker database is employed, will be able to pick them up from the employer declaration that this person is no longer unemployed, is now in employment. Secondly, because the UI deals mainly with the private sector, for government, we are also negotiating with DKSA to link with the personal system, so that the minute somebody that we refer, instead of that person coming back to us, is employed in the public sector, we are able to pick that one up and immediately remove that person from the workforce database. And we are also talking to staff. Staff although indicated a number of challenges around this disclosure, but they were willing to assist us because they believe that there are quite a number of people who are also not anywhere in the system, and we need to find mechanisms to check their data. And this is the fourth area that we are also looking at, which is around international tools for tracking of these web seekers. For instance, there are people who may not be that we may assist in terms of counseling, entrepreneurial skills, and so on, and they go and start their businesses. Now, this person may not be in UI or in PESA, but because they are self-employed, it becomes very difficult to pick them up. There are a lot of taxi drivers who are declared as unemployed people in other shops and so on. So those tracking tools are very important, because if you take countries with like China, India, with populations of 1.3 billion, 1.4 billion, and their unemployment rate is less than 15%, it's because they master tools in this area where they are able to track their own people that may be having a blocked figure of unemployment, and yet the people are involved in some kind of economic activity. But because the tracking tools that we have don't pick these people up, you then declare them as unemployed. And that is why unemployment in South Africa is very, very high. But there are people who are self-employed and so on. And for tax reasons and so on, people will actually enjoy that safer and remain outside. And the last thing that we are looking at is the automation, so that employers in registering opportunities align with the CFO, and the web seekers also align with the CFO, so that automation, that is the automatic machine, can then happen immediately. I think the last question related to public employment services, and I think this was also brought, was whether the Department of Labor contributes to decent employment. Now, in answering this question, I think maybe to take decent work pillars, there are four. The first one talks to employment creation. The second one talks to rights at work. The third one talks to social dialogue. The fourth one talks to social protection. Now, honorable members, if we take the four pillars of decent work, one can then argue that, yes, the Department of Labor is playing a role in this area, because as government, we believe that our role is to unlock mechanisms to provide a conducive environment and also to play directly in those areas. Now, if you are to take the Department of Labor's programs and match them against the pillars of decent work, we definitely do it. You take social protection, IES, UI, and compensation in terms of protecting and providing the social safety network once people are temporarily out of employment, they are doing that. On the right of work, labor policy, CCMA, is playing a major role. Social dialogue, labor policies, bargaining councils, CCMA are playing a major role. On employment creation, public employment services, productivity, labor policy, IES, is playing a major role. I mean, if you were to look at IES, not from the perspective of the number of inspections, but if you were to look at an accident, if an accident was to happen in Parliament and Parliament was stopped or in a production process, the whole production is lost for a specific day. But therefore, the production of an accident in a specific manufacturing environment does contribute to employment on its own, because it does not result in loss of income, etc. And directly on employment creation, the Department of Labor has huge reserves in the form of UI and compensation fund. Now, we don't put that money just in the bank. We give this money to the public investment corporation, some we give to the IDC, some we enter into agreements in a number of projects, be it infrastructure and so on. The airports that we are seeing, the big highways, the housing, all of those, there was a direct investment by the two funds and therefore a direct role in terms of employment creation. On the social security as we speak, we are also talking about this whole issue of pension funds and the extent to which workers' pension funds are invested directly in the job creation. So I think to answer that question, yes, there is a major role that we are playing in terms of implementation. I may have omitted others, but I try to clarify that. Thanks very much.
Just for
Mr.
Chairman, someone else. Are you saying that the information you are providing to us is not accurate as a result of you not knowing which ones have been employed, which ones have not been employed in that database of employment seekers?
Yes, Chairperson, but there are two things there. The information we provided is accurate in the sense that when the auditors come to us, they want proof. And the information we provided is where the auditors can go and check confirmation from employers confirming that indeed these people have been placed. But like we are saying, is that we may be under-reporting because there are a number of people that get into employment, and the AG agrees. The only thing that the AG was saying to us is that make sure that you have tools that you can also track these other people so that when we audit you, you can give us that proof. We cannot report to you numbers that the AG cannot audit. So that is why we are saying that we are embarking on this other avenue so that the true picture of placement can be given to you, because the AG also agrees that we may be under-reporting simply because we don't have tools that can give you the accurate report. That is why the placement currently stands at 14,000, because we have to currently we're relying on having to phone and having to get an employer to send us confirmation, which the AG can then come and audit.
I'm always hoping that you can just phone an employer and say so and so. Because if you phone me, I will tell you, yes, it's here. She's here or he's here. How are you going to know that he's not here? I'll give you all the details that you want. So for me, I want further than that. So I understand, because it's clear that the information, the fact that you don't have that full information of who has been employed, who has not been employed, you might be under reporting or over reporting. Or you can't be under, you are right, because I don't think, because you will take the ones that you are 100% sure that if the AG is checking, he's going to find them. Okay. No, I understand. Okay.
Thank you, Chair. There are two questions that have been asked. All of them arising from slide number 25. I think the first one is, what do we mean when we talk about competent and complete labor organization? What's labor organization? This deals with both employer organization and trade unions. In terms of the law, both employer organization and trade unions must register with the registrar. And complete application means for both trade unions, not only for trade unions, only for both trade unions and employer organization. The next question was, whether the extension of collective bargaining promotes sound labor relations. Now, the promotion of sound labor relations, the question was also whether it is about legislation. And the promotion of sound labor relations is twofold. We work with the legislation that promotes sound labor relations. And as members know, that legislation, you change and amend legislation once in 5 years. You don't change legislation every year. Precisely because you want certainty in the labor market. Now, the other aspect of sound labor relations is the enforcement of that legislation that you've got. Now, our enforcement of Labor Relations Act, which deals with this area, is divided in twofold. One part is dealt by the CCMA, the dispute resolution part of it, which deals with resolving disputes speedily, thereby helping to make sure that there's sound labor relations in the labor market. I'm sure the members agree, if you don't resolve this within the labor market, there will be no sound labor relations, and that's the one part. The second part of sound labor relations is what we do as a department, the one that facilitates collective bargaining and negotiation. Now, if we do not extend collective bargaining of agreed by the parties in the labor market, the end result of that you find out there was no compliance with those arguments. If Governing Council enter into arguments and those arguments are not published, then parties to the Governing Council themselves and non-parties are not going to comply with those arguments. And if they are not complying with those arguments, the effect on the labor market is such that you are likely to have more industrial action as a result of lower wages that are being paid to workers. And the extension of collective agreement therefore facilitates and ensures that when there are agreements, the conditions under which workers are working on are agreed that the parties have published in order to ensure sound labor relations. The second part of this is the restoration of organization, that is trade unions and employer organization. Remember, if trade unions in terms of the law are not registered, they are not going to be able to represent their members at the CCA. In terms of the constitution, trade unions don't have to register. But the only disadvantage for unregistered trade unions is that they cannot access the CCMA services. If they cannot access the CCMA services, it affects social and sound labor relations because they can't represent their members. If they can't represent their members, they can't resolve disputes easily, they can't resolve strike and the chaos in the labor market. And that's our take on these two areas in their effect on sound labor relations.
Thank you. There was an issue about the numbers with regard to the protection, the size of the protection of vulnerable workers, the fixed rate figures. That's definitely a typo. And then we'll verify and provide the right information. I think also, if you look at the percentage of workplaces dealt with, the figure there can't be correct. So we will correct it and do that. The number of companies not complying is reflected in 40, and the number of workplaces dealt with is 40%, the percentage thereof. What I'm saying is that there is a type of a, I the right figure at this point in time, so I probably will make that available.
Comply and not complying. How are we going to know that this information is 100% correct? Because what is written here is number of not complying. I'm talking about all the provinces. In the EZ 938. And then, how do you know when they are complying and when they are not complying? We don't know which ones are complying. We don't have that that list or an example and say he's not complying, and this is what he has not complied for, and then number of workplaces dealt with, 938. I'm sure that 938 is also because this number of employers who are not complying, then you assume when you write another 938, you assume that these are different companies, 111. So they will definitely make 938. But then workplaces dealt with, they are 100%. Maybe it's something that we're talking about that is not correct. I don't know. Number of notices issued to who? Number of cases referred to. But okay, let me not deal with that one. But as we go out, if we go out and go oversight, our way is to oversight and start telling us, where will you go? If we were left with to go on oversight and check in Eastern Cape on these number of cases that you have dealt with, there are 938, where should we go and what exactly should we be looking for when we go to those places? I'm not asking Eastern Cape, I'm asking generally, I'm making an example of Eastern Cape, the numbers that I hear, how do we know that it's accurate?
Thank you, Chair. The slide we're talking to now, for example, for Eastern Cape, the rate of the slide before it, if we can start on the slide, and just making a reference that line. That's why we say it didn't have a target of 3262 and then has detected 4356. Now, of the 4356 that were inspected, 938 were found to be non-compliant.
We want to go and do oversight on what you have just reported to us. Where should we go and what is that you must look for?
Thanks, Chair. We do have what we call inspection registers. And we have those inspection registers that are counting the number of files of companies inspected. There is a verification source for all the companies that were inspected and for all those companies that were found to be non-compliant. There will be verifications of the court registers, we've got inspection files.
So everything is 100%. When you have been inspected, everything there in terms of compliance is 100%.
Chair, can I just ideally, when you go into an inspection, you think out that the company X does not comply. So you issue a notice, whether it's a compliance order or it's a contravention notice or it's an improvement notice or it's a provision notice, you issue a notice. So what we want is an inspector must use the instrument. So if you have 10 companies that did not comply, so 100% of those companies that did not comply should be issued with notices. So that's what we mean by 100% dealt with. So if you have 10 that you expect that did not comply, all of them must be issued with a legal instrument that requires them to comply. And if they don't comply, you then take them to court. So when we say 100%, we say all of them have been given notices. Now the stage that the next stage is cases referred to court, which will be all those that have been issued notices, how many have been referred to court. So it's a process. Now an inspector would have a checklist, things that an inspector must look for when they go and do an inspection. So they are required to file that. So when you go to an inspector file, an inspector's file, you will see the name of the employer, the number of employees were there, the nature of the business that they are doing, and the areas that the inspector has covered when the inspector has done an inspection. So when we say the company complies, we're saying it complies with the basic condition of employment, it issues, it pays the employees the prescribed minimum, it does not pay the employees below the minimum wage, and also it complies with occupational health and safety regulations. And then we would then say the company complies, contributes the unemployment insurance fund and the compensation fund.
So you understand when I say if you go to this company, that's what told they have been inspected. I was asking you, if they are inspected, does it mean that everything is in order? But you are explaining to me, you are saying you issue a notice. But then you can't assume that after issuing that notice, that all is done. When is the process of going back and check and say, now, all these issues that we're not happy with, they are dealt with.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Chairperson. After the non-compliance order or prohibition or notice has been issued, depending on the nature of the issue, then employers are given a chance to correct. Now, there will be a revisit after 90 days. Then the inspector will then revisit the place and check whether they are compliant. If they are not compliant, then what the DG has indicated can be referred to court. But if they are compliant at that stage, then obviously the inspector will check and then give them a clean bill of health.
Can you say to us all what is on the slide you have checked and all is in order? Your inspectors have gone there the right time to check and all is in order, and if you go there next week on the oversight, you will tell us these are the companies. Maybe some regional reps are not here. Western Cape is here. Yeah, Western Cape, you were visited. You number inspectors. But it's red. All these red numbers, the numbers that you are indicating, if we were to go there tomorrow, maybe let me not personalize. If we were to go DG, do you then get, before you come here, they told you, they tell you which ones are complete, which ones they have not got there to, which ones that you say, members, you can go there, everything is 100%.
Sure, certainly we can give you a list of the companies. If you say today you want to go to, you can say in Mowbray, we'll give you a file, pick and pay file. That file will tell you when last was pick and pay inspected. What were the issues that were picked up when pick and pay was inspected? Were there notices issued to pick and pay? Were there follow-up inspections done? So that you will get on the file. So we have a sense of the type of transgressions and which companies, so we have a list of that. So if you require that, we'll make it available so that when you do your oversight, you go to these companies that we have declared that we inspected. So it's possible. So there was a question on what is our plan with regards to improving the performance of the Gauteng province. We monitor performance on a regular basis. In fact, what we have agreed to do now is to personalize performance. So if a certain province is not working, that the DG would write to that, through the COO, the DG would write to that province and say X, Y, and Z is not happening. Why is X, Y, and Z is not happening? So the whole idea of consequential management is now being implemented in the department, so that we know if our team is not working, we know the reasons why our team is not working, and if it's reasons that are within us as a department to address, we address those. But if it's not, if it's reasons that are beyond us, we then escalate those reasons. But the point we're trying to emphasize to all our colleagues is that if you're given a task to do, you have to do it. If you don't do it, there will be consequences. And that's the only thing that we can do to make sure that we improve the performance. It's only when people know that if they're not doing their work, something will happen to them. I think we finished all the questions. The last point on the client satisfaction survey, we will make that information available to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and DG. And perhaps at the next presentation or attendance of the partner, maybe we could have a presentation on it, and then we can would be possibly insightful. Thank you.
The Chairperson, the Honourable America asked for the kind of special survey that we indicated in the report that we have done. He's asking us to, when come back, to do a presentation so that he can see what does that survey entail. The other point here that you said we must cover is the program of the International Labour
Council. We go to that one, I don't want us to go there. Members, we have looked at the questions, because if we are, then we're going to move on something else. There is no hand. And Didi, you can brief us on the file.
Thank you, Chairperson. The conference starts on the 31st of May up until the 13th of June. On the 31st of May, which is on a Sunday, there will be sessions where the different groups will meet. For instance, the African group will meet, and they will look at their participation on the conference, the different chairs from the different regions will then also meet, for instance, government, national, internationally. They will then meet also on the eve of the 31st to look at the issues that are affecting government. Then on the 1st of June, from 2:30 to 4 o'clock, the election of officers, which will be the president of the conference, the vice president of the conference, and rapporteur. And then there will be opening statements and discussion on the committee's working methods, and those committees include your committee on the application of standards. And then you have the adoption of documents, which is the work of the committee. These are the documents that guide the work of the committee during the conference. And then on the second day, on the first, you will then from 4:30 until 7 have group meeting. And from 7:30 and until 9 o'clock you have the group meeting continuing. And then on Tuesday, the second day, you also have group meeting from 10 up until 11, and from 11 you have a general discussion on the general report. And then you have the adoption of list of cases. This is where employers and employees will then agree on the cases that will be dealt with by the committee of on the application of standards. So all the countries that have complaints with regards to non-compliance with the convention that they have ratified, these are the cases that the committee on the application of standards will deal with. We're very happy this year that we have been given an opportunity to chair one of these sessions. Mr. Tiforo Ndebe will be chairing the session. And then third day, we have a discussion from 10 o'clock until 1, which is a discussion of cases of serious failure by the member states to respect their reporting and other standards related applications. And the second thing that's going to be happening concurrently with that is that we will have a general discussion with the replies of the chairperson of the committees of experts, the representative of the Secretary General and the Vice Chairperson of the employers and the workers group. This is a session that will finalize the issue relating to the powers of the committee of experts, because the employers are arguing that the powers of the committee of experts, their recommendations, should remain just a recommendation. They should not be mandatory or should not be compulsory in terms of the different country states or member states implementing these recommendations. They should just remain as recommendations. Then we have group meetings from 2 up to 5, and then individual cases that will be dealt with from 3 up until 9 o'clock. And then on the 4th, again, there will be cases from 10 o'clock up until 9 o'clock. And then on the Friday of the 5th, they will also continue with the cases up until 6 o'clock, when there will be adoption of the conclusions of these cases, and whether the plenary session agrees with the conclusions that the committees will have made with respect to how these cases should be resolved. And then from the 8th to the 9th to the 10th, there will also be cases that are ahead. And then on the 11th, there is examination of draft general report by officers. The officers will be the Director General of the ILO, the President of the Conference, the Vice President from the both employers and workers, and the rapporteur examining the draft report. And then on the Friday of the 12th, it will be the adoption of the general report by the committee, and on the 13th, it will be the adoption of the report in the plenary of the International Labour Conference. So that's basically the program. There will be events on the sidelines of the conference, for instance, the institute, the international inspectors committee will be meeting on the sidelines of the conference, but there will also be a summit on the sidelines of the conference. I know there's one that we have been invited to participate in, is on the future of jobs. So we'll be participating in that session. There will be other studies on the sidelines of the conference that members can attend as well.
Thank you,
TJ. Thank you, Minister DJ. With respect, could just advise the Mr. Wasgarani if he could email us at the program. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much, TJ, your knowledge. We hope that when you come back, the issues of concern that you have raised, at least they'll be included. And I'm sure by the time you come and tell us what is that you are planning or the work in progress in acquiring these labor centers, that stage, at least things will be moving from where. That when you come, definitely we won't be where we are today. I'm worried about these employers, these employees who are squatting in other areas, but they can hassle. Because if you are doing these mobile centers, all of them, they can be deployed and go and look outside on different days, depending what capacity do we have in terms of it. Mobile labor centers. And I think fine, but we don't want 50%. 50% is not good enough. And thank you so much. Can we are recording to the remaining to look at the program. And after the committee, the members that group will not remain. So let's leave it to the members. Something that should take their things and go, and then we can see the committee.
Thank you.